Beyond Brunel, talking about the future of infrastructure in the Southwest from the Southwest Infrastructure Partnership, supported by ICE Southwest.
Welcome back to Beyond Brunel. Today we're exploring the link between infrastructure and economic growth. How can the Southwest use infrastructure to unlock sustainable and long-term growth for the region? In the studio is Jan Ward, Chair of Plymouth and South Devon Freeport. And online, we're joined by Dan Pritchard, Founder of Tech Southwest. Hi, Jan, and hi, Dan.
Hi.
Hi.
We're talking about infrastructure for growth. And Jan, I wonder, how does infrastructure directly impact economic growth in a region like the Southwest?
It's one of the issues that has held the region back. There's a huge requirement down here for the enabling infrastructure. So one of the things the Freeport are doing, a lot of the seed capital that we've had from government is being used to generate the new infrastructure projects that really do need to happen. Across the board, it's road, some of the energy projects, some of the work around the port in terms of connectivity in the port. There is an absolute need here. And I think of all the regions in the UK, we are probably one of them that needs that investment more than any others.
Dan, we know that infrastructure is an enabler. So I wonder, is there any recent success stories that you can think of that really help to bring the Southwest into a position where we are growing?
Well, I think there's a success story. There's ones that go in big. So you think about Agritas and Gravity and the scale of that. That is not a local project. That is a national relevance. And that's fantastic. And what that, of course, that does in terms of that factory by M5 Bridgewater Junction, that is only deliverable and achievable when the people buying into that and bringing that to the Southwest can see that we've got enough there in terms of investment, in terms of infrastructure, in terms of supply chains, in terms of jobs, you know, and of course, Hinckley and the whole connection with Bridgewater and Taunton College and the Energy Centre, all of that, that is an amazing template that we've built, regional partners have built, and there's a private sector, public sector, education, governments, and delivering and getting on to deliver. So that is an absolute huge success story that we need to sort of elevate more, and is a bit of a roadmap for us. Not saying everyone is going to be a big, huge national significance, but without doubt, energy and clean energy is right up there as the opportunity for us for the next decade and beyond.
Yeah, moving on from that, to endorse what Dan said, at Langage, we've got the hydrogen hub starting to develop now. And that's going to be very, very important in terms of the clean energy process that we're looking to do. But then we've also got some work that we've been doing with Cape Water Harbour. And part of the seed funding that we've given to them is to work on their infrastructure within the harbour itself, because they're looking at adding in the ability for larger ships to come in, but also for those larger ships to be able to have clean propulsion systems. So that's a really, really important part of that whole net zero agenda that we're trying to support with the money that we've been given. There's a whole range of stuff going on in the harbour, especially down at South Yard. But we've also got these developments at Langage with Carlton Power. And there's a whole range of stuff on the table, things that I can't talk about at the moment because they're in development. But these are applications that we've had through the Innovation Fund, which we had some money for the region from the Innovation Fund. And that's been used to support quite a lot of tech firms, in fact, who are going to be using that to do research or to do development of measurement systems, for example. There's a whole range of stuff happening. And I was really, really surprised, actually, at how much there was actually going on.
Jan, just in terms of the Freeport, I know you've mentioned it, but what does that mean in practical terms? What is a Freeport?
Oh, okay. It's a little bit of a misnomer, really, because it sort of sounds like it's an open system that anybody can get involved in and everything's deregulated and you've got a free hand. It's not the case. I think it's a little bit of a misnomer in terms of the name that it's been given, the designation of Freeport. Basically, what the Freeport is going to be doing is there are some tax advantages in terms of duties being paid on goods that you're going to bring in. So if you're bringing something in that you're going to manufacture into something else and then re-export it, you get the opportunity to postpone paying any VAT or duty. If you re-export it, you don't have to pay duty or VAT. If you bring it into the country, i.e. across the border from the Freeport, then the VAT and duty becomes payable as normal. But there aren't any other deregulation of the sort of things that you would have expected seen as any business. So employment regulations apply. All of the regulations around planning still apply. All of the company's regulation that you have to have, financial regulation, all of that's in place exactly the same way. But there is also the ability for the government has allowed the freeports to retain some of the business rates that will get paid by the people that come into the freeport. And that will be recycled into economic growth as well. As I say, it doesn't really describe it very well, I don't think. The name freeport doesn't really do it.
Dan, it sounds like the freeport is a good example as being a bit of a facilitator for investment and for growth. Yeah. Are there examples in the tech sector? And can we learn from what's happening with the freeport?
Yeah, absolutely. My background is in brand, and you need these brands with real strength behind them in terms of the opportunities, the connections. If you think about Freeport, you know, that is just another layer on a very sophisticated and very global facing marine hub that we have in Plymouth, but how that stretches across with Maritime Southwest, across the whole of the south coast of England. So that is a global play, right? That is a global play that we have an opportunity. So when it comes to infrastructure and investments, it's an easier message. It's an easier story, whether that's our MPs, whether that's international delegations. It's an easier play and absolutely one of our fundamental strengths that we have in the southwest of England. And clean energy is another one. You know, you think about that blue and green economy, and what is the government grappling with right now? How to get to net zero, how to tackle energy bills. These are absolutely UK PLC issues and challenges. And for the first time, perhaps in a generation, the southwest is at the front in terms of clean energy. Oh, well, you look at Flow, you look at Hinkley, you look at Gravity and the EV work around batteries. What Jan is talking about, green hydrogen, you know, geothermal, Eden. Okay, we should be at the top table around opportunities around that and how we're unlocking the investment, the skills. And the same with Marine Freeport. I think those two are right up there. And it's great to see organizations like Great Southwest and Weka starting to position themselves around those things and support those things in terms of international and national investment events and those aspects. And from a tech sector point of view, that's massive because actually the tech sector in the Southwest is full of very small companies. Actually, the average size of a tech company in the Southwest is about 10 people. But if you haven't got the layers of the local, the startups, the next level, £1-3 million turnover, and start to get the bigger players and the corporates, internationals, you haven't got a thriving ecosystem at all those levels. So I think really identifying those big opportunities and going big with those, but how they link through in terms of supply chains and skills and opportunity. And then the investment story becomes a lot easier. When we, in 2024, went to the London Tech Week for the first time, did our first London Showcase event, we went big on blue and green. That was our message. And that's how we got the big national investors in the room. There's many different things across the whole of the Southwest, challenges, opportunities, strengths and weaknesses. But you've got to go big on one or two things each time if you're going to get the right people to talk to. And those VCs, those funds that were all around green investment as agritech or marine, however you describe it, net zero, clean tech, they were there and starting to see the Southwest as, okay, there's a lot going on down there. We need to come and take a look.
Yeah, I would say that there's definitely been, not necessarily a reluctance, but there hasn't been enough shouting about what goes on here. It's not until you start to dig beneath the surface and you see all of the things that are going on. And as Dan was saying about the large tier ones that are going to be getting involved in some of this stuff and the VCs that we're going to try to attract down here, you've got to have that supply chain behind it. And those smaller businesses, they're the ones that have got the flexibility and they're the ones that are going to spend a lot of time developing these systems and the people that are going to be working on the innovation. So those supply chains, although they're small businesses, they're a vital part of the infrastructure themselves, in as much as they need to feed into those big projects. And they're the ones that are going to bring along the new ideas. Smart Sound is one of the things that I just was absolutely astounded at the amount of work that is going on Smart Sound. I mean, I'm not sure whether many of your listeners would know about Smart Sound, but it's basically interconnected devices. There's some of them subsea, some are surface, some are airborne. And they're about connecting. It's about marine connectivity. It's quite difficult to explain how that works and how that benefits the marine industry. But what it does, it allows for a proof of concept for quite a lot of those small businesses. but also allows for sea trials of projects that people have developed that are going to look at things like autonomous devices, that are going to be looking at the systems for environmental control and environmental monitoring. There's a whole range of things, weather monitoring, for example, sea state monitoring. All of that is down here. And I'm not actually aware, I mean, Dan may well be, but I'm not actually aware that there are other areas of the country that have got that coverage, such a wide range of coverage that we've got in the Smart Sound in Plymouth. I think it's really impressive.
What do we mean by VCs?
Venture capitalists. So it's a tier of the investment landscape that we struggle with in the Southwest. 80% of VC money at the moment goes into firms in London, in and around London. And yet we know a startup in the Southwest is 17% more likely to be here after 5 years than if you start up in London. We've got lower costs. We've got more of a supportive collaborative ecosystem, whether that's the Freeport, the Science Parks, Tech Southwest, and Set Squared, and organizations like that. So we do better with our startups, even without that level. So venture capital, it's not your early stage. You've got to have proven your worth, hopefully gone into revenue stage. You might have gone through that whole phase of your grants, innovate, you tested the products, MVP and all of that. But you know, there's real traction there. There's a market opportunity. VCs will only start to pile in at that level. But we also know VCs are lazy, like the rest of us. So they are used to doing things in certain ways. And we've got to shake that up. We can only blame ourselves really for not attracting, I guess, the big eyeballs around this, in terms of we've got these amazing hidden stories. We hear about them all the time. We've got to get our act together, because they're not going to change unless we force them to change. And where do they go? They go where the money is. We know we've got these amazing companies. We know the ecosystem is now really, we're putting in some of the infrastructure around this, in terms of how Oceans Gate and Plymouth University and the Science Park and the Freeport, all of those things, that starts to send a message of, we know what we're doing, we're joined up. But one of the big focuses of Tech Southwest in recent months and going forwards is the whole funding and finance piece, because in terms of infrastructure, where do you think that as big connection projects, landing the big tier one opportunities to move down here and invest and find the land and everything else and link it in, or all the way down to the innovative companies coming out of universities and elsewhere, that is only going to happen when they think it's the best place to be. VC will have limited time, and to get them out of London, if we're going to get them down here, we've got to go in with the best one or two things. So VCs, in terms of that venture capitalist funding, which too often sits within London and sits in the Southeast, we can't sit there and shout about that in terms of moaning. We've got to shout about it in a very positive way, in terms of, hey, the smart ones, you think you know a trick or two, wake up and smell the money down here, really. But we've also, of course, we've got to give them really strong opportunities. Our companies have to be investor ready. You know, we have to have all our ducks lined up around that, whether that's going in marine or green tech or AI or whatever it might be, because you don't get second chances.
And the Freeport, part of our remit is to do handholding for those companies and to help them be investor ready. I actually sit on the board of a venture capital trust, which is a very tax advantage investment fund. And effectively, those funds, they have to invest in companies that have high risk, because one of the other issues that you have with the finance industry is their risk averse nature. And so trying to get them to invest in things and to understand some of the newer opportunities that are coming along. Companies and fund managers, they're not going to invest in things they don't understand. So we've got to make the message understandable. And the best way to do that, as Dan says, is to get them down here, get them to come and have a look at what we've got down here and how much there is for us to offer to people and how much they're missing out on, I think, is the key to this. But they have to understand what these companies are trying to achieve. And we've got to be very, very clear about that. Otherwise, the money will not come. I think that there's some fantastic opportunities down here for investment funds. And as I say, I sit on the board of an investment fund, so I know the sort of thing that they're looking for. And I think certainly in the marine space, we're almost untouchable, to be honest.
And of course, the other thing they love is that trajectory.
Yes.
Look how far that trajectory is happening. And from an individual company point of view, absolutely, they want to see where they come from, where they are, and wow, look at the roadmap ahead. And as a sector, as a sort of an incubator and supporter of these companies. When we did our London showcase, we had companies like Arc Marine, Additive Earth, Kelpie, you know, so that's the three, one from North Devon, one from Plymouth, one from Bristol, playing in this space in different ways. And they got surrounded afterwards, because it wasn't just a story they told of getting to here today. It was, look what's coming, look what the backing we've got, look where we're going. And some of those firms are raising now in America and elsewhere because they're bypassing London, because London's too slow. And that's a really nice message to send out to that VC community, in terms of plugging in that part of the infrastructure, because we can't rely on central government. It's never done much for us in terms of investment. We've had the Southwest Investment Fund, of course, 200 million, but that's a fraction compared to Northern Powerhouse, Midlands Engine. They're on their second funds before we'd even got our first. And our first was smaller than their first and smaller than their second. So, you know, that central government bit, we've got to keep pushing at that door, but we've got to build our own solutions to this funding and finance part of the puzzle.
Yeah, I'm very, very keen. And I am in a commercial environment all the time. I'm far more keen on us being independently able to fund some of this stuff and making sure that we've got the ability and that we've got the skills, I suppose, more than anything else, to go out and get these investments without having to have the government standing behind us all the time. They do tend to neglect this area. I think that's absolutely right. So we have to do this for ourselves. I'm very keen on making sure that we are making the point about we're not going to get left behind. Just because we're not in the north, that doesn't mean to say we don't need help. But by the same token, we don't want to be dependent on government funding. I've always been a little bit worried about being too dependent because policy changes. And when policy changes, you could find yourself in a difficult position if you haven't got alternatives.
Beyond Brunel, talking about the future of infrastructure in the Southwest. From the Southwest Infrastructure Partnership, supported by ICE Southwest. Search for us on LinkedIn, follow us on Twitter at SWIP Partnership and at ICE Southwest.
I want to pick up on that point about Northern Powerhouse and so on. It's really important, isn't it? Because we've seen huge investment in the North. I know HS2 has seen its challenges, but it's sometimes referred to as the natural powerhouse of Southwest. And I wonder, do you think that people are too focused on the abundance of renewables and actually they're missing some of that finer detail? You mentioned earlier, Jan, about smart sound and examples of sea state monitoring hadn't even occurred to me. So are we missing that bigger picture? And if so, how do we shout about it more?
We are too quiet. Yes, we undersell possibly. But I think that attitude is actually changing. There is an image of the Southwest as being the place to go on holiday. And it is. We can't help it. We're beautiful. We can't help that. You know, that's what we were given. We were given this gorgeous place. So, you know, that's going to always be the image. However, underneath all of that, there is all of this other work that's going on that's changing the way that people are employed here. And that's the big thing that I'm really keen on doing, is to bring the skills for industry here. A lot of that is around the enabling infrastructure. There's so many elements that you have to pull together to be able to make that infrastructure work. So it's not just roads. It's not just rail. It's not just building more convenient places for people to travel to. It's far more about all of the other underlying things that go behind that. I mean, one of the things that I think gets missed an awful lot is with offshore wind especially, and the floating wind projects, the Celtic Sea Array is going to have the same issue, is the subsea cabling that goes behind that. That industry is absolutely vital to this. And it's also incredibly important when it comes to energy security. Also, for data and data storage, without the subsea cabling, you can't transport the data across miles and miles. You can't bring the power onshore where you need it. So there's all of the elements of those that quite often get missed underneath. It's quietly done underneath the surface and people don't realise it's there. So there's a whole range of skills that need to be developed in the region. And the skills, the ability to teach those skills is here. And I think that's another part of the whole infrastructure piece, is making sure that we've got those skills and they're being developed into the future.
Yeah, I think that's really valid. And again, if you think about, we're talking energy security. That's the UK PLC. You're talking defence security in the Southwest as well, actually, in terms of, if you think about infrastructure and military, that's the UK PLC. And probably food security as well, actually. Mm. The levels of food production for the whole of the UK in terms of the homegrown that happens within the Southwest is vastly superior to nearly all other regions. So that, again, that's what gives me hope in terms of I suppose there's this moment in time in terms of these are things that are not just nice to do or nice to have. They are absolutely critical to the future of the UK in terms of the politics, the shifting sands, I suppose, around public opinion, around environmental issues, around climate change, around net zero, living in a dangerous and uncertain world. And this is major change around upskilling, the pipelines we have to create, the investment. It is that big, I believe. And it'll be fascinating to see how this unfolds. For the first time, we have quite a few cards in our deck, I suppose, for the Southwest, where we've often seen as sort of out on the edge, overlooked. Well, guess what? The edge is where it happens now. The edge is where you have the offshore coming in. It really excites me about being on the frontier and all the elements we have down here in that blue and green space, and there's sort of interlock into that. And you talk about how we tell that story, Chris, but the pieces are starting to come together in terms of when I first started this role, Tech Southwest, I thought it was going to be about building a brand, but everyone said, no, just join the dots. Just join the dots across the sector, work out who we are. So we've done that. But by doing that, you start thinking, okay, we start to understand our narrative and our story that we can take to the top table, we can talk about internationally. And that blue-green economy piece is absolutely right up there as one of the big pieces of that story.
Absolutely agree.
Blue-green skills is something that we've talked about on Beyond Brunel before. We know that that's a huge potential growth area. But I wonder, Jan, based on some of the discussions we've had so far, are we lacking commercial skills? The ability to go out to investors and engage them, talk about what we're doing as engineers or environmentalists or techies?
My experience of working with small businesses, which is something I've done all my working life, I would say that that is something that is quite often missing in a lot of small businesses. Small businesses generally start with a great idea, and they have a fantastic thing that they want to engineer somehow or develop. And that doesn't necessarily always bring commercial skills with it. And so part of the job that we have to do is a group of people coming together to try and get this region moving and start to use all of this undeveloped assets that we have to try and help those companies to have that commercial acumen, to get them, as Dan said, investor ready, but also to network them together so that they can support each other. I mean, I started a small business many, many years ago. And part of the whole being in a small business on your own, especially, is about trying to make sure that you're doing the right thing and running ideas past people, getting information from people. I spend quite a lot of time now mentoring smaller businesses and trying to help them to become more commercial. And certainly with some of the work that people do in the tech area, and some of the work that companies do in developing product ranges and processing, developing a process for recycling batteries, for example, it's the commercialization of that that this country has always struggled with. That's the bit. And I have to say that some of the blame for that lies with the investment community and the risk-averse nature of the finance industry in the UK. Because if you go to the US, there is a far more entrepreneurial attitude to investing in something new. And there's much more of a willingness to take on risk. Whereas in this country, we've always struggled with that. And it doesn't help companies to bring things to commercial viability quite often.
100%. And I think actually that is one of the opportunities for the government in terms of if they want to unlock investment into businesses, because obviously if you support the economy, you're supporting the businesses, you put that at the heart of your strategy, tax revenue goes up and that feeds into helping social care, helping the health service, all those things. And well, we have two investment summits every year that we hold in the southwest of England. And one of those in 2024, we had a guy who invested in America, one of the angel groups there, the big groups, and here in the UK. And he just put his slide up between the two, just to show the differences, you know, in terms of they are excited by risk. They're happy with failure, you know, across their cohort or their portfolio, because they know that that's part of the journey. Mm. And then we don't. And then we have smaller sums, more risk adverse and not prepared to do that. So part of it is about the attitude to risk. And then the other part, I think, is the government unlocking money. You know, there is lots of money sitting in pension funds. There's lots of money sitting there in more regulated parts of the capital market, I suppose. And it's like, well, what are the opportunities around that? You know, in terms of investing in our new generation of startups that are emerging around tackling net zero, for example, you know, unless we have that fundamental change at that level as well, it's going to be very hard to shift the dial on risk, because you need to know that the government gets it. You need to know the government has a long-term strategy, because people want certainty, right?
Dan, when it comes to digital infrastructure and data, we see Bristol as a bit of an innovation hub, a tech hub, but how can we distribute and exploit some of those opportunities across the region?
Wow, that's a really good question and a really hard question, because we're forever moving on. Getting broadband, hurrah, tick. Getting good broadband, hurrah. You know, having hubs like Science Parks with really top quality gigabyte level is one thing. And then you start looking at AI and the amount of data that needs. And you look at the new AI supercomputer that the University of Bristol and other partners have pulled together. And it's in super quick time, incredible. And that now is looking at research projects and is putting out calls to SMEs, actually, as part of that mix across the Southwest to come in and use that. But that requires, again, scale and impact. And that was a government that said, yes, okay, here's some funding to help you get on and do that. So I think it's one of the perennial challenges in an area that's big and has got Bristol as a powerhouse in terms of, if you think about all this future economy technology, which is how the Labour government frame it, this future economy piece around quantum and deep tech and AI and cyber. We've got some real strengths there in Bristol, Cheltenham, elsewhere across the region. And how you play that out, I think it is about the tech hub focus, Plymouth, Exeter, Falmouth, in creative tech, Bournemouth creative tech. You look at the whole of the Southwest, we've got some amazing hubs in their own specialisms. And I think they're the horses we have to back. And of course, you then have ripple effects and companies all over the place doing it because they want to build amazing tech companies in amazing places. Why shouldn't you? Why can't you? As long as you've got the infrastructure to plug in. But I think it's always going to be on the table about that digital infrastructure piece in terms of taking that to the next level. You think of what's coming around AI, VR, AR, all these things that are there, and companies are developing products and putting those products out. Every region is going to be fighting for more and more of this stuff and more unlocking the potential. And we're not going to get every single rurality and village up there, but we have got to go big on our priority hubs and demonstrate they're the ones that you need to be backing and supporting, putting in the very best digital infrastructure. It's a global economy and the Southwest is solving global problems. So we need to tap into that and try and be at the forefront and keep telling that story.
Yeah, I think it's a constant emphasis, isn't it, on that enabler. You just got to keep on talking about it all of the time and emphasize how important it is. And quite often, the people that you're talking to don't really understand the full impact of what these things will become eventually. There's going to be somebody in a garage somewhere that's sitting at a computer and is going to pick up some idea. Oh, well, if it does that, I can make it do this. So, for example, if you think about machine learning, that's been around for quite a long time, but that was enabled by other technology. And somebody came up with the idea of making a virtual machine that you can monitor and see how and model how that is going to do a job. It's all of that type of thing that we don't know what we don't know, I think, is the key to this for me. Quite often, we just don't understand what the potential is because it will be constantly evolving.
Jan, it feels like there's opportunities for one infrastructure provider or one part of our infrastructure sector to piggyback off another almost. And I suppose the example I'm thinking of is green energy development and perhaps marine or maritime cybersecurity piggybacking off of that opportunity. But are we focusing on the right sectors at the right times, or are we trying to tackle too much as a region?
No, I think we've got it just about right because we've taken a look, a very close look at what we have to offer, and we've picked on the things that we know are future opportunities. So we're trying to make sure that our offer is quite focused. Our offer is marine, space, and advanced manufacturing. Essentially, it comes down to those three things, and they all complement each other. They all support each other. So I think our offering is actually quite simple to get across as far as a message is concerned. It's just within each of those areas, those sectors, there is a massive set of opportunities. And one of the things, I suppose, to a certain extent, the Freeport has to make sure we do is focus on the right ones within each of those. My main point when I first joined the Freeport was there was a discussion about how we set the structure up. And one of the things was that we had at the time, the net zero agenda was a sector on its own. And that's not where we should be going. That runs across everything that we do. So that's threaded through everything. It's not a sector on its own. Net zero achievement isn't on its own. It's in everything that we do. So all of those areas that we are specialists in has that agenda running through them.
Dan, I wonder, penny for your thought, where does existing infrastructure fit into all of this? And can we continue to grow using our existing infrastructure?
Yes, we can continue to grow. And I think with tech, of course, it's infinitely scalable. So isn't that wonderful in terms of, I know companies of 5 or 6 people that are selling in 10 plus markets around the world and being very smart at how they do that. So in that sense, it is in terms of a global market. It's not just about the numbers in terms of the number of people in your team, the square footage of your warehouse, because you might outsource that. You get clever with what you need as your core costs and kept in-house and what you then partner up with others. So it is. But having said that, the current infrastructure is what we've got to play with right now. So it is always going to be critical. And whether it goes back to the basics of road and rail and sea and regional airports, which we must not lose sight of, that is still absolutely a baseline foundational part of the infrastructure piece that we're talking about, through to the more thinking about cyber resilience as part of our infrastructure and thinking about AI and what we know and what we don't know around what does that mean, you know, in terms of opportunity. We are where we are with our baseline, but the opportunity is endless.
Well, that was another really insightful discussion. A huge thank you to my guests today, Jan Ward of Plymouth and South Devon Freeport and Dan Pritchard of TAC Southwest. Please join me again for another episode of Beyond Brunel very soon.
You've been listening to Beyond Brunel from the Southwest Infrastructure Partnership, supported by ICE Southwest. Search for us on LinkedIn. Follow us on Twitter at SWIP Partnership and at ICE Southwest. Beyond Brunel is presented by Christopher Ackland, a Fresh Air Studios production.